A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Times the Game podcast. I am Max Rushton here on an emergency loan. Let me take this chance to say I'm really excited to be signing in the window. I've supported the Times football podcast since I was a small boy running around the house pretending to talk over Henry Winter in my Gab Marcotti replica shirt. Before you ask, I will not celebrate today if I say anything good or interesting because of my respect for other excellent football podcasts hosted by smooth Italian football experts that I may or may not be hosting in a couple of weeks' time when he goes skiing. Here to say good and interesting things, on the phone, Oliver Kay. Hello, Oliver.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very well. What room do we find you in?
The kitchen. Okay. The kitchen, obviously.
Excellent news. And you couldn't be bothered to come in?
It's a long way. And I don't think you reimburse my travel costs, which would be extortionate. So, you should think yourself lucky.
I mean, are you committed to, you know, do you kiss the badge during the pod? Do you have that commitment issue with it? Or like Dimitri Payet, are you looking for a move away?
You can never rule anything in or out. As Cristiano Ronaldo would say, only God knows the future. So, but that takes us in down an unwanted avenue. So, who knows?
Happy at the club, right in front of my eyes. The greatest Ipswich player since Frank Yallop, James Scowcroft, is here. Morning, James.
Morning.
And Julien Laurent. He was a good player. Yeah. I'm not knocking. I'm saying I rated you as well. Scully. Bonjour, Julien.
Bonjour, man.
You're looking great.
You're looking so beautiful, too.
Before we start, did anyone hear the last 30 seconds of the game podcast last week? Ollie, did you hear this?
I've saved it. What I'm doing is I'm going to binge listen to them all from the very start.
Oh, like a box set.
From season one. I'm going to take that approach. I'm doing that with Coronation Street at the moment.
Oh, well,
I'm up to 1973, and it's really slow. Really
close. Oh, well, just for your listening pleasure, here is the last 30 seconds of last Monday's podcast.
I won't be here next week. I will be elsewhere, but I'm sure you'll be in very competent hands. And don't worry, I will lobby very, very hard to make sure that Alison Rudd fills in for me and not Max Rushton.
The game is brought to you.
Oh, so does anybody know what I've done to... Julien, you were there at the time.
I was.
Did you support me?
I tried. I mean, Alison did it once when Gab wasn't there, mm-hmm. and I was surprised it wasn't you. I don't know. You and Gab need to sort it out together, maybe on a boxing ring or...
With enough problems in the world right now, do we need a Marcotti-Rushton war? I'm not sure it'll make page one, two...
Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor are going to have a fight soon, mm-hmm. or Klitschko and Joshua, we could put them onto the undercard, and we could be the main event.
He started it. Right, today we are forced to ask if the FA Cup has lost its magic again, despite all the shocks. And it's deadline day, so we'll do our best Jim White impression. Do you want the running order? You know, they always announce the running order, chaps. So here's the running order. Sutton, Lincoln, Liverpool, Millwall, Fulham, Spurs, Arsenal. And if we can still be bothered, the other ones. Chaps, Alan Shearer says clubs making wholesale changes are cheating fans out of an FA Cup run. The 13 Premier League clubs in the fourth round made 98 changes in their lineup. Championship sides facing lower league opposition also rotated players. Leeds made 10 changes. Brighton and Newcastle made 9. Shearer says clubs care about money. Fans care about trophies. It's very unfortunate. What do you think, James Scowcroft?
I disagree with that because if you look at the attendances, the fans back up the manager's decisions, don't they? If you look at, I believe, Crystal Palace, Manchester City, there was 13,000 fans there, 4,000 Man City fans there. So that's half of Crystal Palace's average home gate. So I think the fans are going with the away from the
it's
FA
sort of
Cup as well.
Self-perpetuating thing, though, isn't it?
I think it's been going on for years, and I just can't see. I think we've hit an all-time low this weekend with what's gone on. And, you know, it's a shame because there's been some fantastic performance and some great clubs have gone through to the fifth round and deserve their moment in the spotlight. But it's a fact that the FA Cup is nowhere near what it once was.
Ollie?
And I think people need to come to terms with it.
I agree with James. I also agree with Shearer on the wider point that, you know, this is all about people aren't interested in doing what Wigan Athletic did a few years ago and winning the FA Cup but being relegated. People would rather finish in the top four than win the FA Cup. They'd rather finish in the top two in the Championship than win the FA Cup. And I think that the problem is, you know, managers are just doing what their clubs want them to do to prioritise the league. And the reason for that is that the prize money in the league is utterly ridiculous. The discrepancy financially between finishing fourth and fifth in the Premier League or between finishing 17th and 18th in the Premier League or finishing second and third in the Championship is just so ridiculous. And even the discrepancy between finishing ninth in the Premier League and 12th in the Premier League, it makes such a massive difference that clubs are motivated by money.
I don't think it's all about money. I think money is a big factor in it. I just think the gloss has come off the FA Cup. I was at the FA Cup final in May when Manchester United beat Crystal Palace and saw a Manchester United manager lift the FA Cup and get booed by supporters. Now, that's nothing to do with money. That's a fact from a club whose supporters see the FA Cup not good enough for their team.
I do think the whole decline of the FA Cup does come from money. It's been the Premier League era in which being in the Premier League and being in the Champions League means everything. And people do look down the noses. Fans look down the noses at winning the FA Cup. And I do think it's all about money. I think, you know, managers will look at their sort of crowded December-January fixture list and think, well, the FA Cup third round, FA Cup fourth round, those are the two games where we'll rest players. Then I think that is because they know that their livelihoods are not going to hinge on progress in the FA Cup, as seen by Van Gaal getting sacked, as seen by Kike Sanchez-Flores getting sacked soon after taking him to the semi-final. Party getting sacked, the FA Cup doesn't matter to owners, and I think that attitude stems all the way down from owners through managers through players and eventually fans.
Julien?
I mean, I get all that, but isn't it great that smaller teams like Lincoln and Sutton reached the fifth round? So
that's a money thing as well, because the money in the actual prize money for the lower the non-league clubs now is great. The TV prize pool they get from there going through to the next round. So it's almost like a two-tier competition. The top two, the Championship and the Premier League, not interested at all, majority of them. But if you get lower down, especially into non-league and you get into the first round and maybe the second round, you get TV highlights, you might get a TV game on the TV. It's worth a lot of money. So money then talks again for those clubs as well.
But for me, the Cup, and whether that's the FA Cup, the French Cup, you know, whatever Cup, is to give the opportunity to those smaller clubs to do something great, to have a bricklayer scoring a goal against professional football players who earn 50 or 100 times what he earns, you know, playing football. And I think that's great. If the FA Cup is at the start of the FA Cup going like, yeah, I hope it's a City United final, because apart from Liverpool, who, you know, again, I thought that was a great game. And even if club changed 10 or 11 players, whatever it was, nine players, sorry. I thought it was great. I love watching Wolves. And if we had 18 Premier League clubs instead of eight in the fifth round, people would say, oh, the Cup is boring. The FA Cup is boring.
Do you think actually...
So I don't really understand.
Everything is better when you're 10, right? So you loved football more when you were 10. And so you loved the FA Cup when you were 10. It probably wasn't as brilliant as I think it was in 1989 or 1987. I mean, yes, it was more important. When I was growing up, there was the European ban, so there wasn't even European football then. But actually, James, was it as good when you were playing? Was it better significantly? Or is this just another nostalgic thing? Everything was better. Kids' TV was better.
Yeah, I think so. And I think one of the big things, money's obviously a factor in it, but we're saturated with football on our television, aren't we? So when the FA Cup final day was... You know,
showpiece.
It was one of the highlights of the year of your childhood, looking back, really. But you look now, there's four or five matches on every single day of the week. So everywhere you go, it's football. It wasn't like that 20
Should
years ago.
Should we just have a sabbatical, a whole year off, all football?
Really?
We keep our contracts, you know, in broadcasting terms, but we just take a year off. Should we talk about the Sutton Leeds game then? Because, you know, they did well. I saw Cambridge play Leeds, and Leeds did pick a couple of their regular players. You know, Pontus Janssen played, and I thought Gary Monk would do the same and play two or three regulars, and that would have probably been enough. But he made 10 changes. 83 places between them. That's great, isn't it? You must be very pleased for the Sutton manager, James. Yeah,
was that 83 places between where Sutton Leeds are in the under 23 development league and where Sutton are? Or do you mean league places as in first team?
I mean league places in first team. Yeah.
Listen, it's a great result for Sutton, isn't it, as well? And the manager, because if you actually look into the manager's background, he's paid for the pitch. He literally runs the club single-handedly now. So it's, you know, it's their moment. And you just hope for them. I'm sure they will do get a fantastic draw.
They'll get Lincoln, won't they?
Yeah, they're supposed to play each other in the league on the day of the fifth round as well.
Really?
So it's like
football
written.
Scripted.
I know.
Did you ever, James, ever play on a? You wouldn't have played on 3G, but on a dodgy plastic pitch.
No.
Never. Luton.
No,
that
was after
QPR
the days of Boundary
Preston.
Park and Loftus Road,
really?
And those days, and just before it all came in.
You know, there's club in some top flights in Europe where you have a plastic pitch. If they win promotion, why wouldn't they not be allowed to play in the league in League Two, for example, with a plastic pitch? I don't understand. It
grass is
no
better.
Sense.
Ollie,
really? Grass like at Millwall, or like grass like you see in many League Two
better,
stadiums?
Julian, it's better.
No, man, I disagree.
What pitches have you played on?
Loads. I played on plastic pitches and normal pitches. What difference does that make?
I've played at Wembley with Julian.
Yeah, I played at Wembley. I'm not sure you played the new Wembley. Did you? I played twice at the new Wembley. Did you play the new Wembley?
Yeah.
You
I
didn't.
Did,
so
yeah,
that was a stupid question. That was a stupid
side.
No, no, no. We played on the real pitch where you never played, and that was a stupid question. There's no. It was a stupid question. No, it was a stupid question.
The new Wembley pitch or the grass pitches or the AstroTurf pitches in Paris that you play.
You're just digging your grave. I don't understand why they wouldn't be able to play in League Two on a plastic pitch. For me, it makes no sense.
Have you seen the pictures from yesterday's rugby match at Newport? Newport County Stadium,
yeah,
Rugby Parade, is used for rugby on Sundays, and it's a proper sort of 1970s style.
Yeah, it's great,
match.
Isn't
it? It is worth it.
Wow, it's interesting. Yeah. Interesting. I tended to agree with you. You think in the professional leagues, you should be able to get a groundsman and the finances to have a decent pitch. But you say Newport's an example, isn't it? Rugby clearly is the money. At a grassroots level, where I play, we're crying out for 3G and 4G because games are cancelled from basically in December until February. But look, well done, Sutton. I should mention the incredible bravery of Malik Wilkes, given his debut by Gary Monk, despite the fact that Wilkes' brother was shot dead in Leeds on Thursday. Extraordinary bravery of him. Sutton through, as you say, Lincoln through as well, 3-1 over Brighton. Are we allowed to delight? Or I just felt so sorry for... It's Fikayo Tomori who scored on loan from Chelsea and scored that own goal. You'd be proud of that finish.
On his debut.
On his debut.
It wasn't quite as good as Darren Bent's own goal.
Yeah, you're probably right.
True. On Friday.
Because Bent had a good old swing, didn't he?
The best OGs I think I've seen.
I've got one thing to say about Lincoln and Sutton. Do the managers have to wear those ugly sky blue jacket that they have on the touchline?
Yeah,
they have to.
Yeah, yeah.
They contracted with Vanarama or something.
Yes. I don't know if it's meant to be in the FA Cup.
Because that's the only... That would be the only thing, really. If just it's those horrible...
Say that
blue
again,
jacket.
Producer Charlie. Everyone in the
Vanarama National League wears them.
Everyone in the Vanarama
have to wear them.
Oh,
and in the Ryman, but when I had my season in the Ryman Premier, the coach and staff had to wear the all black Ryman Premier.
Wow, we should make Pep.
Brave.
We should put Pep in
one of them. Man, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. In the fifth round, every manager from Arsene Wenger to Pep Guardiola to everybody have to wear those blue, flashy Vanarama jacket.
Liverpool 1, Wolves 2. Ollie, well done, Wolves and Paul Lambert.
Definitely. I mean, apart from the, you know, Liverpool are, as the modern countries like to say, in a bad moment, and they were very, very poor on Saturday. But Wolves, absolutely full credit to them. I mean, the fact that they scored in the first minute and were 2-0 up so quickly, and that tells you something about their approach to the game. I thought they were really impressive. I'm staggered looking at them, how much they're struggling in the Championship. But it's not a surprise that somebody like Paul Lambert can go there and set up a team very well and as a player did, because I've always thought he's a really good manager. I know people say, oh, well, he was a disaster at Villa. I think anybody would have been a disaster at Villa at that time. The club was just going stale completely. I think Wolves is a dysfunctional club that he's taken over at a difficult time, but I think he showed there on Saturday that there could be good times ahead for him.
He looks 10 years younger than when he was managing Villa as well. He's got a real glow about him. The Wolves fans, Julien, love Helder Costa. Portuguese winger from Benfica. So. He was on loan at Monaco last year, so you can tell me a bit more about him.
He couldn't play much. He couldn't play much, and Monaco couldn't get in the team last season. The one thing I would say is that, considering the season he's having for Wolves, if anyone from Liverpool had gone to see Wolves play or watched them play or something, they would have known he was the danger man. The one that maybe you had to look up for, maybe sometimes make sure that he wouldn't get the ball too much or it wouldn't be so easy for him to get the ball, so maybe cut the relationship between him and his midfielders or him and his fullback, whatever side he was playing. And he felt like Liverpool just discovered who the guy was. That Jurgen Klopp and his staff and his players had no idea that Helder Costa could actually cause problems to them. And it's exactly what he did. And I was even surprised when he came off. I thought, why did you take him off? He looked quite early for me in the game and he still looked very good on the ball. He didn't look too tired or anything. And I thought, oh, maybe Wolves will come to regret the decision of taking him off. They didn't in the end. I thought he was outstanding. And I can't believe that Liverpool didn't defend better on him by having a special sort of a special plan against him.
Three defeats in a row at home for Liverpool. Klopp out, James Scowcroft is saying.
Well, they've got a big... No, I'm not saying that. They've got a massive game tomorrow night as well, haven't they?
Chelsea on
Chelsea
Tuesday night
as well. I think the next three home games, Chelsea, Tottenham and Arsenal, which will define their season.
Are you surprised? I am surprised that they didn't win all these games.
Yeah, they've had a nightmare week, haven't they? I just think the way Klopp is very high intense, high energy... they're massively missing Mane up front. I think that was evident against Southampton in the week. So he'll be a big, big boost for them when he come back. But I think it's very, very hard to maintain the tempo that he wants his sides to play throughout the season.
A big game, Liverpool-Chelsea, which incidentally is the only interesting Premier League game in midweek. I'll read them to you and you can tell me if any of the others are interesting. Arsenal-Watford, Bournemouth-Palace, Burnley-Leicester, Middlesbrough-West Brom, Sunderland-Spurs, Swansea-Southampton, Liverpool-Chelsea, West Ham-Man City, Man United-Hull and Stoke-Everton. With all due respect to the other 18 teams in the Premier League. Millwall 1, Watford 0. Junior, were you surprised?
I wasn't, and we talked about it. Do you remember when Millwall beat Bournemouth? And we said, if clubs go there, like Watford or Bournemouth the round before, and are not ready for a fight, they will never get something against a team like Millwall, who's high on confidence, who are a very good manager, who in Steve Morrison have a very good striker, who's a handful. And
a modern-day James Scowcroft.
Maybe, but Morrison maybe was not good enough for the Premier League, and he gave it a go, and you know he went to Leeds, and he scored some goals for them, but maybe he's happier where he is now, and that was always not maybe the right level for him because he's probably better than League One and Millwall. And I thought, once again, loads of changes to Watford, but more than the changes, it looked like that team was just not ready for a fight, and Millwall could have scored more goals, and I thought they completely deserved to go through.
Listen to Steve Morrison on the radio this morning saying it was probably the easiest game they've had this season.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. Remember we said that? Yeah, if you're not up for it.
Yeah, I saw them in the previous round against Bournemouth and they absolutely annihilated Bournemouth from start to finish, on and off the pitch. The crowd were vibrant, up for the game. The Millwall players were. And Bournemouth just couldn't handle. Again, they made 9-10 changes anyhow and the reserve players could not handle the tempo that Millwall players had played at. Didn't see the Watford game, but I can imagine it is exactly the same. And if another Premier League team comes down to the Den in the next round and treats it with the same, they'll get knocked out as well.
But there's nothing special about what they're doing. It's a 4-4-2 and just everybody fights for each other, runs for each other, second ball, third ball, fourth ball, fifth ball, whatever. The pitch is poor, especially if you compare with the plastic pitch. But that's what they do. And if you're not ready, you would get beaten.
Ollie, very good news for Millwall as well. It's been a good week for them, hasn't it, given the fact that there's not going to be this compulsory purchase order as well of the new Den.
Yeah, I mean that was probably a more important victory in terms of the club's future. I mean it's much more important. It was a really big issue that, and it's probably been underplayed in most of the media. But I'm delighted that it's been sorted out seemingly for now. And it's great that they got that result. I mean, as we said, it's one of those places which it might not be as intimidating as the old Coldwell Lane days, but the new Den is one of the few genuinely sort of intimidating grounds for.
Intimidating. It is. Not many grounds are intimidating, but that is one that still holds. They're still very, very on you. I've played there several times at the New Den, and it is unlike.
Were you scared, James?
I was absolutely petrified.
Really?
No. No. No, but seriously, it is intimidating. It's even the fans, it's across the far side of the pitch, opposite the dugouts there, where the executive boxes, even the people in the executive boxes just had a three-course meal, all stand up and all chanting at the referee and the opposition and this, that and the other. So it's a unique, and I think Neil Harris is ideal for the role there. He's played for the club, he understands the club. I think they've now played 9 games where they haven't changed a team, which at any level is something special. And good luck to them in the next round.
Fulham 4, Hull 1. Fulham scored some lovely goals in this game. The best bit was, obviously, the Abel Hernandez double penalty. Has anyone seen this?
Yeah.
Would you like to talk us through it? What a wonderful 2 minutes of football that was, wasn't it, Julien?
It was. It's really rare to miss 2 penalties in the same game. Some have done it before. Martin Palermo, obviously, missed 3 penalties in the same game. But for 2, it's pretty bad. For a player who's, you know, scored 2 goals in the Premier League, what, 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago? Have you missed 2 penalties in one game?
No.
One in one?
What was your record? 50%.
50? Is that
good
enough?
That's not bad.
50 is good enough, 50%.
Well, when you've only taken 2 penalties in your career, you must want to score one.
Who were they against?
Took a penalty against Crewe Alexander at Gresty Road, and I took another penalty for Ipswich against Chelsea in the quarter-finals of the Coca-Cola Cup, and Ed De Hoy, I think, was the Chelsea goalkeeper, made an unbelievable save.
They still talk about it.
They do indeed.
Was he in tracksuit trousers that day, De Hoy? Was he a tracksuit trouser keeper? I mean, I know Carine was.
No, he wasn't.
You're getting mixed up.
Okay. Any chance to mention goalkeepers in tracksuit trousers should be done. So, look, bad luck, Abel Hernandez. Slightly taken away by the fact that some Fulham defender got in his face after he missed the second. You know, that sort of puff your chest out and you just think.
Martin Keown-esque.
Yeah, just don't
Does
be
that
such
happen
a,
in your five-a-side league on a Sunday morning? Or
Saturday afternoon, sorry. 11-a-side.
11-a-side.
Okay. At least once a game, there is a set 2. And you're just like, guys, come on, it is not worth it.
Have you ever provoked anyone?
Obviously, you know, you've had people treading on your toes and pinching you and all that nonsense and an elbow to the ribs, you know, at a goal kick when you're miles away. But that
I'll tell you a good one.
Yeah?
A corner kick. When you get a corner kick, especially this time of year when it's wet and it's cold and everything, just stand on someone's toes. Oh. You know the new boots have got, the new night ones that don't. Just get your back stud and just right in their middle.
When I was at school, we played the Army. We were in a league with the Army, right? And there was this centre-back was kicking me all over the place. I was at sixth form. And so at a corner, I just held his hand and gave it a little rub. And he went absolutely ballistic. So I have provoked. He went ballistic, but I couldn't because all his sergeants were on the touchline. So then I just said, at ease. And he really didn't like that. he kicked me later. So back to actual football.
The Spurs, magic of the cup.
Yeah, Spurs of Fulham.
Yeah.
Can we mention Ryan Sessegnon?
Yeah, of course.
Who... Maybe, Ollie, you were going to mention him, but who really looks like... I know we got carried away a bit. We've all done it about seeing young players. And Scorey here is the master of knowing all about young players in this country. But Sessegnon looks like the real deal. He can play forward the back, left back, forward the back. He can play wing back in a 5 as well. He looks better. I don't know. Every time I see him, even on just highlight show like this game, I didn't see the full game. But what do you think?
I think he's an outstanding young player. I don't know if you saw the highlights where his dribble worked. I think it went for a corner in the end. Got fantastic technique, wonderful, you know, both feet. He's a real star, one to watch.
Ollie?
Unfortunately, I didn't see it. It was one of those games that should have been on live and wasn't. I was at Old Trafford, which... you know, people say shouldn't have been live, but then again, should I have been there?
No, but it's an interesting point you make about being at Old Trafford and that game being on telly. Was that I think Gary Lineker said on Twitter that once Lincoln had got through, the BBC tried to change their televised game from Manchester United to the Lincoln game, and the FA wouldn't let them do it.
I'm not surprised that you can't do it at sort of 10 days' notice as an afterthought. I'm sure the FA did make some kind of contingency plan where Man City was going to be televised, was it? I don't suppose you can go shifting kickoff times around too much and shifting broadcast schedules.
No, you're probably right.
Once you've made the initial decision, but it's I think the whole issue with you know which games are televised, which games aren't, is an interesting one because it's clear that people like a lot of sort of classic FA Cup games when they come around, but the fact is that the BBC show Manchester United and they get more viewers, and it's 57 days, 56 or 7.
Yeah, United fans are putting a banner up. Yeah, you know the they still have one for Man City where the captain for the years that they have got one which 57/58 coming up. Do you not think though that the argument Gary Lineker's argument was poor though, because out of all the games that should have been at the very bottom, Manchester United were Wigan at home. Even though they were saying, well, if this would have gone, we would have had this game on, etc. Irrelevant. That game shouldn't have been on. And if we're talking about reinventing the FA Cup, it's not just the people with the purse strings. I mean, it's everybody connected.
Then again, Liverpool Wolves, should that have been chosen? With hindsight, definitely. But it was the same category as game, as was Tottenham Wickham, which was although not an upset, was
a humdinger. Wasn't it?
You know, an absolute humdinger.
Should we talk about it for a second? I just sort of felt for Gareth Ainsworth, 3-2 up in the last minute. And you just think then Spurs have only got 10 on the pitch because Trippier's been injured. Got to feel for him because, yes, you can be glorious in defeat. And as a Cambridge fan, I've enjoyed the glory of defeat quite a lot. But you're that close to knocking Spurs out. Spurs had they made a lot of changes. They still had a decent side out, didn't they?
It's just the quality, isn't it, at the end? I think there is a divide again. If you look at the big clubs, I know Liverpool, it hasn't worked out for them. Manchester United, though, and all the other clubs, the top five or six, do have enough strength in depth where they can make changes and still knock teams out. That's why I think we'll see semi-finals and a final with the top clubs in it.
The year ends in a 7, which, if carelessly written, can look like a 1. So could Spurs' name be on the cup?
No, I just think that the fixture list will just mount up for Spurs. Now the UEFA League, they're in the Premier League hunt as well. FA Cup, I think it'll just be one too many for them.
Do we think Rod Stewart should do the draw?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Alan Stubbs was on Fantasy Football last week.
In Wetherspoons, in Glasgow.
He brought so much joy to so many people. And I just thought it was just such a lovely moment. And I love Sir Rod Stewart for doing that.
And the best thing about it was that it was sort of a response to the famous stuffiness of FA Cup calls, and yet the SFA guy next to him just remained as close.
That's what made it so good. The bit when Rod Stewart is, when they say back to you, David, and Rod Stewart then looks round the back of that, the banner to say, where's David? And you're so right, Ollie, the SFA man played it. I mean, he was the ultimate straight man.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Highlights. Anybody want to mention anything on the following? Arsenal. Nicely, Danny Welbeck. Looking good. You sort of forgotten he existed.
It's good. First start. Well, yeah, but he was unlucky with injuries. I think his game was really, really good, very encouraging, better than the Solbay celebration, as you know. Do you know about the celebration?
No.
Ollie, do you know about the celebration?
Tell me.
Skawi, do you know?
No,
so
you
it's that
me.
Turkish chef who is very famous in Turkey,
right?
Who, when he cuts the meat, then salts the meat in the way that Welbeck celebrated, so putting his hand like this.
Okay.
And people who listen to the podcast, you can't see, but hopefully you would know by then. So a lot of players have done it as a celebration. Toprak and Çalhanoğlu at Bayer Leverkusen last weekend, and Welbeck at the game yesterday on Saturday.
Thanks for that.
What's the link between Welbeck and Turkey then?
I don't know. Maybe, it's the trend. Rihanna is wearing a T-shirt about it, about Solbay and all of that. So I guess it's the trend.
It's the latest dab.
It's the mannequin challenge and all that kind of thing. But
it was good to see. Not that he goes to a Turkish restaurant and he's into High Street.
No. Maybe it does. Maybe as okay. well it does. But what's really funny is as well that Turkish chef, and I'm and then after that we don't have to talk about it. But on his Instagram account are all those photos with Manuel Neuer, Fabio Capello with a huge sword as well. It used to be weird, but yeah, celebrity chef and players taking to him.
Well, it's nice to see one of those Lincoln City players sort of miming the sort of cutting off of a doner kebab or something like that, wouldn't it? That would have been the ultimate sort of counterpoint to that.
When did you last have a doner kebab, Ollie?
It was probably only about a year ago, but that was the first one for about 10 years.
Okay,
did you enjoy it?
And it was after a match at Arsenal, and it was quite good. It felt like it had come from a real animal rather than
So it was a posh one. It wasn't a dirty one.
It was pretty dirty, but it wasn't as dirty as the dirty ones I had back in the
right.
day.
Okay, James, same question to you.
Probably 6 months ago.
Okay, sober.
Yeah, Californian Grill in Ipswich on Woodbridge Road.
Okay,
highly recommended.
Okay.
Do you know what? We went for Christmas drinks with my football mates in North London where we live. And then I really wanted a kebab on my way home. It was 11:30. Everything was closed. I was really gutted.
Oh, unlucky. I quite fancy one now.
It's Valentine's Day in a couple of weeks. So
get a big elephant's foot.
Yeah. Exactly. Get
table two. Who would like to praise Stephen Dufour's delightful chip? I will then. Started the move and just absolute class on the edge of the box. Just took a second, looked up. And any goal that scored where the ball takes a long time to go in, I appreciate greatly.
Perfection.
Yeah, so well
and
done.
And he also looks like he's going wide. That the camera one angle just behind him, it looks like the ball goes wide and that he almost like miskicked it in a way and then he goes in. It's wonderful.
And Dufour is like a northerner saying Defoe, so I like that as well. Palace lost to City. Big Sam, why are you, your head in your hands, James? Marcotti would never do such a terrible gag, would he? What do we think about Big Sam?
I think the next two games for Big Sam and for Crystal Palace are very, very big. They've got Bournemouth away midweek and Sunderland at home. And I think the Big Sam Crystal Palace revolution needs to get going ASAP.
Do you think all pundits were slightly guilty of just presuming they'd be fine because he walked in the door?
Yes.
Were you guilty of that?
And I think you can stretch that beyond pundits as well.
Really? Ollie, were you guilty of it?
I certainly was. No, I thought he'd go in there and it would be perfect for him. And a team that had been underperforming previously, I thought it was right up his street to go in there and sort out the defence and get them playing. And I looked at the first month and thought that they've got a tricky start, but the problem is that they've lost matches such as Swansea at home and the other teams, Swansea and Hull, who have changed manager. They suddenly look like they've got a bit more about them than they did a month ago. So it is looking tricky. I wouldn't particularly judge him on Saturday. I think it was a bit of a mishmash lineup, and it was clearly wasn't their priority. But no, they need to get going very quickly. But interestingly, Sunderland last season didn't particularly get going quickly. It was only really sort of March, April that they went on that run. So I mean, he's not necessarily somebody who comes in and transforms things overnight by his sort of sheer energy. He's generally an organizer who does bits in the transfer market and then gets things going and building the team he wants. But it's it does seem like a far tougher task than it looked when he came in.
West Ham, Julien, have got rid of Payet to Marseille, giving the French a bad name, Dimitri Payet, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean,
so French of him.
It's not so okay. So your wife to be,
yeah,
is Australian.
She is, yes.
Yeah,
yeah.
Imagine you have three children as well, and they're not happy when they go to school. They're not happy here. The language is an issue. Mm-hmm. Everything is an issue. Mm-hmm. They're small children as well.
Yeah.
And you've lived yourself in Australia and you had a great time there and you never really wanted to leave Australia to come to the UK. You would have happily stayed in Australia, but you were forced to leave to go to the UK. Mm. And your wife and your children come and say, it's difficult for us here. You know, we're not happy. And you feel the strain to yourself. It's impacting your game. Yes, you earn a lot of money and you still play well, but there's that issue. Maybe you would want to go back to Australia.
I mean, if, even with no kids, unless the Australian for Good Morning is, why am I in this stupid country? I think she wants to go already.
So that's an interesting point you make about footballers
being human beings.
So someone's forced you to come to London to earn £100,000 a week and you can't stick out another 2 years.
It's not just about the money, though. It's not just about the money. He's got small, young children. His wife is not happy. He's not happy here. The children are not happy. Why would he stay if he can go?
Is there a wider point, James?
I can see why the West Ham fans are unhappy. I can see that. There's that loyalty bonus as well that you got in September for £1 million. And
why did you sign a new contract last year then?
I agree with you. In February, when they signed a new deal for a huge pay rise as well, they said, OK, let's give it another go. Let's give it another year, 6 months until the summer. Then there's the Euros, then we see. And then even after that, we can go up to January and see. And the fact was, or so they say, I'm not saying he's right or wrong or whatever. They gave it another go for another year and it was still the same problem.
Yeah, Julien makes a fair point, which I think people forget, is that footballers are human beings and exist not just on the pitch, not just at the training ground, don't they?
Family is a huge thing for a lot of people.
I've been there, done that. You know, you move away and you don't know anybody and you have to adapt, but you have to look at the bigger picture. You know, I think he's all of a sudden thought, this is no good, I'm going to go back to Marseille and everything's going to be better. I'm sure that when his career finished, which will be soon, because is he now 29, 30?
13 March.
Right, so he's not going to go on, you know, number four, maybe 5 years. I'm sure he'll look back and think, the French league is nowhere near as strong as the Premier League, Julien. True. And I'm sure he'll look back and regret his decision.
A player like Payet, I would think, will enjoy it far more in Marseille this season, at the upper end of the French league, and would have enjoyed it far more last season in the team that was performing, rather than the struggle that the season has been in a fairly soulless stadium. I'm sure that, you know, the malaise that has hung over West Ham this season makes things worse. And you know, when you've got those off-pitch issues, which he clearly has, I can understand why he suddenly thinks, I just want to get out of here. My only criticism really would be, do it in a respectful way. You know?
Well, why couldn't wait to the summer?
Those fans, that club has taken it to heart and refusing to train, refusing to play for the under-23, that is disrespectful. It should never get to that level. Unfortunately, it does far too often these days. But
would it make a difference if he had played out of his skin or tried as hard as he possibly could for the start of this season? Because there were times on the pitch where he did not look interested. Had he done that and still left, would he have gone, or would have West Ham bosses been under more pressure to keep him because he'd been playing so well?
I think players often think, I mean, James will be able to talk about this far better than I can, but players often seem to think they have to kick up a real stink in order to leave, and it's happened in various transfers in this window. It's happened for years. But I think there would be more sympathy with him and, you know, more respect for him from West Ham fans in particular if he'd said something about, you know, if he'd said publicly what the issue is and why he feels this way. But people don't like saying these things publicly because that often tends to jeopardise payments that they might be due and that kind of thing.
I think whoever's advised him, Ollie, hasn't advised him very well at all. I think there's better ways to get out of a football club than the route he's chosen. You don't have to make a lot of noise to force something like that. There's better ways to handle it.
That was by his choice, though, and he did it before in France when he was younger, when he wanted to leave Saint-Etienne to go to PSG. I mean, he scored one of the goals of the season. That solo effort against Middlesbrough was a phenomenal talent,
Julien.
It's incredible. But on a pure business point of view for West Ham, okay, you're losing a top player, like you said, Scotty, but you bought him for £13 million 18 months ago, right? He turned 30 in March. You sell him for double what you've bought him for 18 months later. You know, that's pretty, for someone who didn't want to play for you anymore anyway. So like we've said on the podcast for the last 3 weeks, he will go eventually. And we knew he was going to go this window because they wouldn't keep someone who doesn't want to wear the shirt anymore. So in the end, I think for them, they can reinvest their money, Snodgrass, whoever else they buy. So maybe in the end, everybody's happy.
I'll make another prediction. I bet he doesn't stay at Marseille for the rest of his career. I bet he gets tempted somewhere else.
Maybe China. And on the subject of families, according to the Daily Star, so it must be true, Colleen Rooney has given Wayne the go-ahead to go to China.
Can't see it.
Can't see it?
Would you be disappointed as a United fan if he was doing that?
No, time's up at Manchester United.
I mean, one interesting thing is, you know, I was at the game yesterday and Mourinho was asked specifically in a press conference, he was asked specifically, could Rooney go before the February deadline to China? And Mourinho just answered it in a completely different way. He said, the only player I'm aware who might leave before January is actually Younger, who doesn't want to sell, but you know, has various offers. It sounded to me a little bit like the door might be open, but I can't see that with United still in three cup competitions, still trying to get into the Champions League via the Premier League, I can't see that it would make any sense at all for them to let him go, even if they got an enormous offer. But it's what is interesting is the suggestion that he might be up for it, and you know, I've asked various people close to him whether that is the case, and I've never really been given that impression. But maybe now, having broken that record, maybe there's a sense of, you know, my work here is done, and maybe he would fancy, you know, a couple of years there for
750
enormous money
grand a week.
Yeah.
What do you do after the third week? That's what I wonder. You guys have your fingers on the pulse. Any interesting rumours or any possible transfer things you think may happen that are fascinatingly interesting? Southampton, close to agreeing a deal for Marco Gabbiadini. 17 Manolo. Million. He must be 57 now.
Manolo.
They can still put him away. Yes.
Manolo, yeah.
It is. I know it. I'm just being silly there, Junior.
Yeah, no, I know. That would be a good one. I would like to see this one happen. I would like Asmir Begovic to go to Bournemouth as well. I think that would be very good for Bournemouth if Chelsea can find a replacement. Igalo, what's going to Igalo do? You know, will someone really spend that much money, 20, 25 million pounds on someone who scored two goals in the last year or so?
Palace have just got Van Aanholt, I'm told.
West Brom going to do... some teams still need play. Yeah. Palace, we were saying about Palace. Surely they need more than Van Aanholt.
There's no rumour of John Terry going to Palace. I don't see that.
David Moyes has got Darren Gibson and Brian Oviedo in. So yeah, Sunderland are safe.
Yeah.
anyway, look, it's deadline day tomorrow, so no doubt it will be covered very carefully and sensitively by everybody. With no sensationalism at all. The African Cup of Nations, do you want to know the scores? You don't, James. Do you, Junior?
I watch it, so...
Oh, you do, so you know. Ghana beat DR Congo 2-1. Egypt beat Morocco 1-0 yesterday in the quarterfinals. And Saturday, Burkina Faso 2, Tunisia 0. Cameroon beat Senegal on penalties. So it's Burkina Faso, Egypt, Cameroon, Ghana. Julien, pick us a winner out of those, please.
Ghana, I thought they look good. The Ayew brothers scored in the same match, which it must be a cool thing when you play, you know, at that level in a quarterfinal of an African Cup of Nations and you and your brother score. It's pretty good. The two goals.
It depends if you get on, doesn't it? Because some brothers you get on and some don't. You know, you don't.
True,
know.
But I love those brotherly stories anyway. And so yeah, that was good. Yeah, I think.
Did you ever score in the same game as Jean-Pierre Laurent?
Clément is my young brother.
That's a good guess.
Yeah, it was a good guess. Jean-Pierre, though, that shameful name.
That was in a lower low.
here we go. No, I never scored with my. Well, we have scored in games together, but not official games.
Okay. Not on the pitch.
How official are the official games? Are we talking
like in a proper league? We've never played in the same team.
I know what you mean, Ollie.
I was always better than him. So we, you know, when we play with friends, we
they once had a referee.
He's 5 years younger than me, so it was always, you know.
It was hard to live up to the hype, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he was lazy. I would have gone angry with him too much.
Well, look, I've had a nice time. Does anyone have anything else to add? Ollie, are you happy? Did you make a cup of tea on the Argo while we were doing?
I did. I don't know if you noticed, but yeah, I did. I was slurping away. But I sometimes remember to press mute when I was slurping away.
James?
One question. We always finish the podcast with a European theme. There was a big, big game in Paris last night, Julien. Explain more.
Yes, there was. PSG Monaco. Monaco were the leaders before Nice won earlier in the day. But yeah, it's a huge game that finished 1-1. Probably a fair result, although Cavani scored late on a penalty 81st. And then Bernardo Silva snatched a point from Monaco literally 1 minute before the end in extra time. Which leaves the whole league still very open, only 3 points between PSG and Monaco and Nice at second now, because Monaco with the draw went back top. So it's just great. It's great for French football as well to have those two teams there with Nice in that title race. And I thought Monaco were outstanding yesterday, I have to say. And I think they're going to give a good run to City. Whoever wins that game, you know...
It's not an easy draw for Man City, is it?
I think all those City fans... When I said it on Twitter the day of the draw, City fans giving me a lot of abuse, everything, blah, blah, you know nothing about football. I do think it's not an easy draw. It's not even a good draw. It's a hard draw for City with the second leg away from home as well in France. And I just can't wait because of all those ties, I think this is the one to watch.
What about... Is it Leicester-Sevilla?
Yeah.
How interesting is that going to be now? Bizarre, Leicester sort of being pretty useless in the Premier League but still being good in the Champions League. Presumably Sevilla will have too much for them.
I think so. I really do. I think Leicester have been good in the Champions League in a very average group, where a group, even with an average Porto team, Copenhagen and Bruges, who were not good enough to be there anyway. So I think they got an easy ride so far, and now things are going to get tough. And we saw Sevilla against Lyon. I saw them against Lyon. I saw them against Juventus. Jorge Sampaoli is doing an amazing job there. Samir Nasri is back to his best level. They've got great players. Steven Nzonzi is having an amazing season for them. And I just can't see Leicester beating Sevilla over two legs.
Has the Champions League lost its magic?
One point regarding Monaco. Monaco had 8 players, 22 and below. Is that right? Who are we going to see in the Premier League next from Monaco?
I think you might see Thomas Lemar. I think you will see Bakayoko for sure, in the midfielder who's been outstanding this year. Bernardo Silva is another one.
Hoddle.
It's very interesting. Hoddle is still a legend there. When he goes, everybody at the club absolutely loves him. He went there when they played Monaco. And
it was just probably the greatest footballer that's ever been.
He played so well at Monaco, won the league there, obviously, but big memories with Arsene Wenger.
Coming soon in the Times, a big feature on Monaco. I was there last week.
Oh, really?
Spoke to lots of people.
Did you have a good time?
I had a very nice time, yeah. It was, spoke to the coach, spoke to the vice president, spoke to Bernardo Silva.
Did you come across Kylian Mbappe, the big young superstar?
I wasn't able to stay there for the match, but no, he certainly came up a lot in conversations and is being watched by practically everyone, not least Real Madrid.
He is the next big, I think Julian will back me up, the next big European star.
18. Mm. Just leave him with us a little bit more, please, English clubs. Just leave him in France. He's only 18. Give him another 2 years maybe and then spend 100 million on him.
And then he can come make his name in an English club for English people and then just leave us. It won't matter.
After 18 months for family reasons.
You can go back to France when the FA Cup weekend's on in every weekend.
Listen, guys, I've had a lovely time. Thank you, Ollie.
Thank you.
Take it easy. Thank you, James Scogel.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much, Junot Leroy.
Thank you. Merci.
Is Gab back next week? Gab Marcotti, the delightful and humble Gab Marcotti, is back next week. Unless Donald Trump has ended the world, of course, in which case, I hope you had a good life.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no,
yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.